Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, this week, shall we talk about your distinguished service with the Marines in Vietnam, or shall we talk about my longstanding commitment to abstinence-only education?
Well, I think Richard Blumenthal is getting a bum rap. He did say that he did serve in Vietnam, but he meant to say he served during Vietnam.
So he should have just had a few more letters. It was the same word, in, but you should have D-U-R in front of it and a G after.
Well, he should have at least four more letters, L-I-A-R. But I think, look, I have said in the past that I was elected president of the United States in 1984. What I meant to say was that I was alive in 1984 and I was living in the United States and there was a presidential election that year. That's what I meant to say.
I think that's an understandable confusion of people's interpretation of what you usually say.
I think there are a lot of people, of course, who, first of all, this weekend the Democrats will meet in Hartford for their state convention, Republicans as well.
Happy gathering.
Well, at least they got rid of that loser, Chris Dodd.
<Yeah. laughs>
But I mean, I still think Blumenthal wins, but...
Wait a minute. You still think he wins this weekend at the Democratic Convention, where they have no real option?
There's a guy named Merrick Alpert who was in the Tijuana band.
Tijuana Brass.
He was. And he was actually an opponent when Chris Dodd was still in the race. He is from the left wing of the party, as was Ned Lamont.
We have so much interesting and important stuff that happened this week to talk about, but we just have to talk about some of these unbelievable stories. Well, let's give him this much. Blumenthal, on many occasions, said...
Yes.
And in many occasions, he made it clear he was in the reserves and he never went to the green and leafy place we know as Vietnam.
Right.
But why do they do this? Why does Al Gore go from saying, well, I had a lot to do with the government funding that led to the internet, to saying, I invented the internet, or something that someone can interpret as being that?
Why does Hillary Clinton have to duck a sniper fire in Bosnia when it didn't happen?
No, she is brave enough to go to Bosnia when there was fighting going on. She doesn't have to have been ducking sniper bullets on the tarmac.
No.
Why do they do
And I don't understand that, too, because at Blumenthal's initial press conference, he said, how dare they impugn my record on behalf of veterans? First of all, one,
No one had.
He has an exemplary record of supporting veterans in Connecticut for 20 years or however long he's been attorney general. And yet, to allow that to go on so long, I think he just thought it was just part of the dialogue that needed corrections.
I think they get up in front of a crowd. And this is true of so many politicians. Bill Clinton used to do it all the time. They get up in front of a crowd. They got people kind of going. They get one sort of response when they tell the story straight. And then they get another kind of response if they embellish it a little bit. And pretty soon, the next time they're giving a speech and the crowd is maybe reacting or isn't reacting enough, they slide into that little embellished version and they see what a difference it makes and they see how much more feedback they get and how much more love they get from the crowd, and they slip up.
We will talk later about what happened in Oregon this week, because obviously that was the key
primary.
But do you remember Wes
Ron
Cooley?
Ron Wyden? Wow. But let me just say, Wes Cooley.
Well, Wes Cooley reminds me, remember Wes Cooley, who was a member of Congress in the class of 94, I guess, and he said that he had combat service in Korea.
Not true.
Then when he found out that he embellished all that, of course, he embellished a lot of his resume and he was forced out. I don't think Blumenthal gets forced out of the race. I don't think he, whatever you think about Blumenthal's insistence that it was just a one-time mistake and it's my fault and everybody's making a big deal of it. There was also a follow-up article in the New York Times that talked from Chris Chase, the former Republican, although hardly a partisan, congressman from Connecticut, who said he's done this many times. Mm-hmm. Many times he talked about his service in Vietnam.
The other thing, of course, that Blumenthal is getting barbecued for, and properly so, is that he always reads what is written about him in the paper. Most politicians do. Blumenthal has a reputation for it. He never called the newspaper to say, no, look, you might have misquoted me. Maybe I misspoke, but I shouldn't have said in Vietnam. I should have said during the Vietnam
year. Until this week when he saw what was written in the New York Times.
On the top of page one on Tuesday morning.
Right, and boy, did he object to what he saw in the paper this time.
But he's been caught dead to rights, and he should have corrected the record a long time ago. We don't think the Democrats have a realistic alternative at this stage of the game. So he's going to be the nominee. Let's talk about how it affects the Republican side, where one of the two main candidates for the Republican nomination for the Senate is a bona fide Vietnam combat veteran, Rob Simmons.
Right. Rob Simmons, former congressman who lost his seat in the 2006 Democratic sweep. I always thought he was going to be the strongest candidate, and the fact that he has Vietnam service does help his cause. Now,
gift from God.
Well, the other gift, or at least the other gift that the Republicans have, is Linda McMahon, the wrestling executive wife of Vince McMahon, who said she would spend $50 million of her own money to win the seat. She was running when Chris Dodd was still a viable candidate. But she also has taken the credit for leaking the stuff about Blumenthal to the New York Times.
Now, that, I think, is less than perfectly attractive to a lot of voters, whereas I think Rob Simmons gets a huge boost because he has the real record. And so he, in a sense, has triangulated himself into a very good position in both his primary contest and in the fall.
If the Blumenthal scandal or mistake or misstatement is causing Democrats problems in Connecticut, there are some Republican problems in Indiana this week.
You can't make this stuff up. Here we have a congressman who is known for his family values, positions, for being a defender of the faith, as it were.
Mark Souder.
He's been there since the mid-90s. He was part of the 1994 crowd that came in. He has survived through good times and bad for the Republican Party in Indiana. And all of a sudden, this week, he just had to get up and say, okay, I'm quitting because I had an affair with a woman who was a part-time member of my staff. And who was it but the woman he was making videos for abstinence-only education with, which of course propelled the story far beyond where it otherwise would have needed to go. Here again, Ken, why do they do this?
Well, again, the fact that he had an affair, that anybody has an affair, is probably none of our business. But what is seems to be our business is the fact that somebody who professes pro-family, pro-conservative values, family values, to be violating the vows of his marriage. And to me, it's a hypocrisy that everybody, it's not so much the sex, because I don't know about sex, but I do know about hypocrisy.
So what comes next for his district?
Well, he resigns his seat this week. He'll be out by Friday. And it looks like the guy who finished second to Dan Coats in the Republican Senate primary, Marlon Stutzman, who was backed by Jim DeMint, one of the conservatives backed by Jim DeMint nationwide, may be the Republican replacement. And that's probably good news for the Republican Party. Souder, even though strongly conservative, has never won by overwhelming majorities. It's not an overwhelmingly big Republican seat. It's in Fort Wayne in the East. In the last two cycles, he got 54%, 55%.
Now, those were Democratic cycles.
And not only that, right, exactly. A lot of his fellow Republicans in the Indiana delegation were defeated.
In a sense, that shows that he was reasonably strong, and this year would not have had a problem.
True, and I think the Republicans still hold on to the seat because there is new enthusiasm for Stutzman if he is the nominee. Governor Mitch Daniels can call a special election, unlike David Patterson, who is still waiting on the massive seat for obvious reasons.
In New York State.
Speaking of sex scandals. But it's just really a shocker. And matter of fact, the Washington Post, Dana Milbank, had a photo gallery of all the Republicans from the class of 94 who did manage to embarrass themselves one way or the other since their election.
Well, it was a big class.
Yeah.
And we had some other political events this week, some of which may live in history. I guess the big headline is
Ron Wyden.
Whoa.
I tell you.
Another nomination by the Democratic Party of Oregon for Ron Wyden. But there will also be those who say, what happened to Arlen Specter?
My goodness. Arlen Specter, 80 years old.
30 years in the Senate.
30 years in the Senate.
Almost all of them is a Republican.
The irony, of course, is that he left the Republican Party because he could not win a Republican primary.
Turns out he couldn't win a Democratic
either.
Primary.
And what it was, the most effective stuff was Joe Sestak, two-term congressman, his commercials reminding voters that Arlen Specter was a Republican. He's no longer, even though he's been endorsed by Barack Obama, endorsed by Ed Rendell, by big labor, he's still has this Republican record to have to defend.
They waited till the last minute to dump that ad on him.
Excellent.
If they had run it in January or February, it would have been probably forgotten by now. But at the last minute, they show him on stage being rhetorically embraced by George W. Bush.
And Rick Santorum and Sarah Palin.
Right. And for a lot of Democrats, it was just too much to take.
And voting for Judge Roberts and Judge Alito, a lot of Republicans.
And against Elena Kagan, when
right.
She was up for Solicitor General.
And of course, a lot of them with longer memories. And with longer memories, they always remember the grilling of Anita Hill during the Clarence Thomas.
And, of course, that came back because of the Kagan nomination.
Right.
And he was, of course, not prepared to immediately commit himself to vote for Kagan for the Supreme Court because, well, he's Arlen Specter. He's got to ask some questions. You know, I think we're going to miss this guy. I know he is not popular. I know he is considered a little intense, even for the United States Senate. He has been an individualist. He has been all for Pennsylvania. He's been difficult in a lot of ways. But in the end, he's one of the guys you need if you're going to get something done in the Senate because he gets down into the nitty-gritty and he's about making deals.
Yes, but I think he was more effective as a liberal Republican in a party that no longer has liberal Republicans or very few of them than he was in a Democratic Party where he's just one of 60 or 59 or whatever it is.
Absolutely. He had far greater value when he was on the other side, except that when he came over to the Democratic side, he did provide the 60th vote for the passage of health care. And without that, perhaps we would not have seen that bill get to the point where it could eventually become law.
We're going to talk a little right after this about Kentucky. And of course, the story there is the fact that the Kentucky Republican Party has moved more to the right with a Rand Paul nomination. But I don't think the Democratic Party...
No more liberal Republicans from Kentucky like Mitch McConnell and Jim Bunning?
Well, no, but staying in Pennsylvania for 1 second, I don't think that the story there is that it moved further to the left. I think what it was really all about Arlen Specter.
I agree. I mean, Joe Sestak, we'll be talking about Joe Sestak right on through to November when he runs against Pat Toomey, and he'll clearly be to the left of Pat Toomey, right, as most everyone is, but it was not about Joe Sestak. Yeah. As well as those ads went and as well as his campaign went in the end, it wasn't about him. It was about Specter.
Going to Kentucky, was it all about Mitch McConnell? I don't think it was either. No, I agree.
No. There, I think it is the candidate who won, who motivated the result.
Right, I agree. Mitch McConnell did push Jim Bunning out of the race early. He felt he couldn't win a third term, and he was probably correct. And it's not that Mitch McConnell decided, I'm going to oppose Rand Paul. It's just that my candidate is Trey Grayson, the
and
Secretary of State.
He was pushing Trey Grayson before anybody had any idea Rand Paul would run for this seat. And let's face it, Rand Paul came out of nowhere. He would never run for office. He's a young guy. He's an ophthalmologist from Bowling Green. He suddenly burst upon the scene, caught the Tea Party energy at its crest, had his father's name recognition, had his father's mailing list to raise some money. And his father, of course, is Ron Paul, the congressman from Texas, who is a Republican and has run for president as both a Republican and a Libertarian, and has a lot of name recognition among the kind of people who are Tea Party activists.
And the race wasn't even close. It was 59% to 35 or something like that.
23, 24 points.
Right, exactly. And you know what's also interesting is that one of the key people who backed Rand Paul was Jim DeMint. And we'll be talking about this a lot, but the rivalry, or whatever you want to call it, between Mitch McConnell and Jim DeMint. Jim DeMint is the kind of guy, the senator from South Carolina, who would rather have an ideologically pure, although smaller, Republican Party.
25 seats in the Senate, but have them all be like Jim DeMint.
Exactly. And that is going to be an interesting dynamic to watch for the rest of the year. But anyway, Rand Paul, as the Republicans won big in Kentucky, the Democrats' result was a squeaker.
That's right. Attorney General Jack Conway, who is something of an insurgent, something of an upstart, running against Dan Mongiardo, who is the state's lieutenant governor, and who had been the Democratic Senate nominee against Jim Bunning last time in 2004, almost beat him.
Barely lost,
it was like a point and a half. Of course, Bunning was sort of in free fall and self-destructing, but nonetheless, it was a Republican year, 2004, and Mongiardo didn't quite get the job done. And I think he thought he was going to automatically slide into this nomination and that it was sort of his to be asked for. And Conway said, no, I'm a little less well-known. I'm a little less recognized outside of the Louisville area.
I'm much richer.
But I got a lot of money, and I'm a young, good-looking guy, and I'm going to run as the insurgent. And by, a handful of votes, a few thousand votes.
One percentage point, right?
He appears to have won the Senate nomination. So now we'll see him against Rand Paul, and it will be, in a sense, the two new faces, the two new young, attractive guys. And in a way, that's a generational change as much as anything else in Kentucky.
It's funny, though, given the fact that it was such a landslide on the Republican side and so close on the Democratic side, yet it's the Republicans who are holding a unity rally this Saturday in Frankfurt because they feel that the party... Look, the Trey Grayson people do not like the Rand Paul people and vice versa. Obviously, there's tension between Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell. For the longest time, Rand Paul wouldn't commit to voting for McConnell for leader. Of course, there's probably going to be no opposition to him, but the fact that that remains...
Yeah, but if there were, if DeMint were to mount a challenge to McConnell for leader, not saying he will, but if he were to, wouldn't you think he'd have the loyalty of Rand Paul?
Right.
He deserves it.
It certainly would. So anyway, they have this rally planned for Saturday to everybody to make nice. Trey Grayson, of course, has already endorsed Rand Paul. And it's the Democrats and Jack Conway who won by the skin of his teeth, yet there's no need for a unity rally among the Democrats.
One other thing to say about this in Kentucky, and I think this might have a lot of relevance for November. Each of the two Democrats who split the vote there, Mongiardo and Conway, each of them got more votes, just raw vote total, than Rand Paul.
Yes, but of course there are far more Democrats in Kentucky than there are Republicans.
And in November, the big trick for a Kentucky Democrat is to get all those people who call themselves Democrat to vote that way.
Right. And Rand Paul on election on primary night was not reaching across the aisle to get disaffected Democrats. He really said, look, I want this Tea Party base. This is the future. This is what I'm going after. And it's a risky strategy.
It is a very risky strategy. And the question that first comes to my mind is, does he believe that? Does he think the turnout in November will be so much more like a primary than a general? general election, that he can win with his Tea Party base and not by doing what other Republicans have done to win in Kentucky, which is pull over Democratic voters.
One more primary I want to talk about, of course, is what happened in Arkansas. Blanche Lincoln thought to have like a 7-8-point lead. Basically, she led by 2 points over Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter.
And did not win anything because they're going to have a June 8th runoff. And she's got money. She's got support. She's got greater name recognition. But in a very small turnout runoff primary on June 8th, I think he's got the momentum.
He does. He still has the Netroots. He has, you know, the MoveOn.orgs. He has labor. And I don't know how effective those groups can be in Arkansas, which is part of a centrist, conservative-leaning state. But she was certainly put on the defensive over her voting record, over her allegiance to the Democratic Party.
And for that last vote against health care. She had voted for the bill back in December when they needed 60 votes, and so that was crucial. But then when it came back under reconciliation, then she turned against the bill, and she voted no. And that was part of the reason MoveOn.org came into the fray on Halter's side.
Meanwhile, while the Democrats are going to spend the next 3 weeks beating each other up, and I think it will be pretty brutal, the Republican candidate, John Bozeman,
Cruise control.
53% in an 8-way race, and he could now save his money and just watch the Democrats go after each other.
He looks like a 10-point favorite for November, at least at this point. He may not be the perfect candidate either.
He's not a great candidate.
But it'll be interesting to see if Halter wins, if he's got enough energy and lift from having knocked off the incumbent, that somehow the anti-incumbent mood becomes a benefit for him. It would seem to me, my guess is he's a little too left of center for Arkansas.
I agree. In a state that only gave Barack Obama 38% of the vote, but you should also remember that only one Republican in history, since Reconstruction, Tim Hutchinson in 1996, is the only Republican to win a Senate seat in Arkansas. And actually, before we leave Tuesday's results, I think the biggest news of that night were the results in Pennsylvania 12, the seat that long held by John Murtha.
36 years by John Murtha. And if that seat had flipped Republican, I think that would have been certainly the headline for a lot of Republicans on the Tuesday results. As it turned out, Mark Kritz, who had been a Murtha staffer for a long time, ran essentially as the legatee of John Murtha in the district, was able to hold it, and without too much trouble. He won by about 7 or 8 percentage points.
Right, 53, 45, right.
And that was pretty respectable. He was also the nominee then to hold the seat in November when he'll face Tim Burns again. He was nominated by the Republicans. But if Kritz can hold on to that seat, the message that was sent by that was that a Democratic person who is running as the representative of that district, demographically, politically, ideologically, staying close to home, can still hold on even in this year where there's going to be a lot of Republican energy, there's going to be a lot of anti-incumbency. And this was a district where John McCain won. And yet, this Democrat could still hold on to that district in a low turnout special.
The district itself is overwhelmingly Democratic, but it's culturally conservative. And Republicans really felt they had a win there. They thought that this would be the bellwether to predict great results for them in November, the kind of district that Democrats have won before, but they could win now. What I think Tim Burns did wrong is just basically he tried to lump Mark Kritz, who was not the incumbent, of course, but Mark Kritz with Nancy Pelosi and President Obama. And it seems like a very lazy and boilerplate strategy for the Republicans. And what I thought,
but it's been working in some respects elsewhere.
But not lately in special elections.
And not if you actually have a character that somebody can organize around. And in this case, Kritz had not only his own, but he had Murtha's. He could say, vote for me. I'm the salute, if you will, to John Murtha. He was riding on his coattails.
And what Kritz said, which I thought was also very effective, was the issue was not Washington, D.C., but it was Washington, Pennsylvania.
A small town in the district outside of Johnstown.
And that's what Murtha cared for most of his 36 years, and that's what Kritz basically would carry on for.
Maybe the bottom line here is that every special election is still very much a universe unto itself. You cannot generalize too much from what happens in an upstate New York race where it's a 3-way contest, and the people really are not thinking there about what message they're sending to the whole world or whether or not they're indicating the November results will be 20 or 25 or 30 or 40 Democratic losses. They're just thinking about their own district, their own concerns, and the choice they have between a couple, three candidates, and they're making a very personal choice.
I think the same is true for this Saturday's special election in Hawaii for the Abercrombie seat, where you have two Democrats and a Republican on the same ballot, and everybody will say, oh my goodness, if the Republicans win that, it's historic.
They're going to win it with 40% of the vote.
It's Barack Obama's birthplace. They're going to win this seat. But ultimately, look, here's the thing what's very strange about this whole thing is that when Scott Brown won in Massachusetts, that meant Democrats were dead everywhere, Republicans were going to sweep everywhere, and now that and the Democrats are saying, well, maybe it's not going to be as bad as we thought it would be in November. Ultimately, I think this keeps changing back and forth for any time between now and November, depending on the results in specific races.
That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.